perfect case of what you're talking about is this not untypical situation where at least a lot was made of it, where a woman would, when she was going to war work, would be taken for her husband's job.
Literally. Right.
And if somebody asked her why she was there, she would say, well, I'm taking my husband's place. And it was not as if like she had anything intrinsically, you know, to do with that work. It wasn't like it was her skill or anything else, but she would take that work and that would...
Well, and the assumption of the employer was that then she would, there would be no problem about getting rid of her.
Right. Right.
That struck me as a total.
Oh, it's hard to know how common that was, but I've seen it. It's
always held up as the one like legitimate response to women who've been challenged for, you know, being on a job.
Insistent about their right to be feminine, and there were even some cases, I ran across a few cases of so-called sweater strikes, women struck for the right to continue wearing those tight sweaters, and they didn't want to wear these drab, you know, masculine-looking clothes. I mean, again, in sort of contradiction to what I think the sort of retrospective feminist view of Rosie is, which is that she wanted to be this sort of macho woman or something. It's really not at all what it was about.
I think it was So that was the image I had a long time of my mother generation until I kind of went into this literature, and then I got a better picture of what really was going on.
But one of the things that I remember my mother saying that she loved the most was a manager of soup. Mm-hmm. I mean, just imagine that concept. My mother was forcing herself to become feminine, to go back into that role, but to stay in that role, she was committed herself to change. She would always say she loved man-tailed suits, black suits. And so therefore, they must have been very popular in the 40s, these man-tailed suits, right? Which we now later, we go to school with man-tailed suits, with the broad shoulders. So even that topic alone, considered that as a great thing instead of a lace dress.
Fashion simplified a great deal, and especially because of the shortage of a lot of cloth. And that really meant that a lot of the fuller skirts, everything got smoothed down. Colors in many cases were, according to what they had, rather than what they wanted.
Or is that wool already?
That paint.
But then we the other princes in a man's color, too, which I think is very interesting comment to see women who really, just 5 years before,
it's interesting that you raised that because, I recently reread The Femininity. Remember that book?
Yes.
And, she makes a big deal about the war also in that book. And, she's talking, of course, about the older generation of women who then, some of whom then became feminists in the 60s. And, it's two generations after all, right? There's the sort of now level or whatever, and then there's the people who, the sort of middle-class college student generation and their contemporaries. So, but she talks a lot about the war as the backdrop to the 50s. It's quite explicit, although there's not very much detail about it. And I think there's something to that, though it's just very hard to know what happens to that germ that's there because, that's what I was trying to say, that there's sort of no support for it. It's an experience that's there, and people obviously remember it and love to be shaped by it in some way, and yet it's very hard to trace.
Well, I guess somebody would have to
do a lot of
this. Mm-hmm.
It would be a good project, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's an interesting issue of the difference between blacks and women in the wartime days. And specifically, you say how, unlike women, there's a struggle going on, unlike the blacks, and they're fighting to control something at the same time. And then you were saying how the difference between then and now is that there has been a struggle going on. Cultural areas and so forth. So I'm sort of wondering what you all think about what's happening in the world today. And increasingly, some of that stuff, despite well fought for, is being taken back or being worked on. Abortion, increasingly, increasingly, the fall of ice and so forth. For both classes, basically.
I guess I think that there's the one thing that isn't going to get reversed, which is what got reversed after the war in some way, is women's workplace gains. It's true that affirmative action legislation, such as the thing this now, didn't have that big an impact anyway, and at least it's not for women. And I don't know. I think in terms of, some of the changes are just not reversible. That doesn't mean.
I think we're back to exactly the same question.
Really? Okay, so we don't agree.
In war literature, the women come with seniority. More than anything else, it's seniority on their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, seniority is actually being the big sort of issue which is going to determine whether women, stay in those.
Because most women are
unionized.
Mm-hmm. I don't agree, but I'm sorry, we're finished.
Well, do you agree? Why don't you?
I guess because today, unlike the war, jobs were segregated by sex during the war too, as we know, but women were in the same seniority units, at least officially, although it didn't work out that way, as men. Employers were able to manipulate the job classifications and say, well, this is a woman's job now, and this is a man's job after the war, and therefore we're only going to call back men. And in some cases, it varies a lot, actually, from plant to plant and union to union. Today, though, women don't work in those jobs very much. The minority of women who are in non-traditional jobs are affected by that. But that the vast majority don't.
Well, the basic smokestack industry.
But women don't work in those jobs much.
Right?
Yeah.
But that was the
right.
Jobs that women got into.
That's the thing. I guess that's why I think it's different. As opposed to during the war when there's really a massive change there, it's been very marginal. The vast majority of women still work in clerical services, et cetera. And they're not affected by this. In fact, they're, less affected than men by the, as a group, women, by the decline of those industries.
At the same time, it just goes in the direction of further sex segregation, isn't it?
Sure. No, that it certainly doesn't. But I guess I feel like so little progress was made to begin with that it doesn't seem that significant. But anyway, we shouldn't have a little. We shouldn't go on about this. Yeah.
I was about to speak about the difference that you made, Professor Birch, between the blacks in the war and the Negroes in the organization and the impact they had. I have heard black women say, who are educated and who are very intelligent, not working in affirmative action offices, say that they consider themselves black before they consider themselves women.
Mm-hmm.
And is it a cliche to say that they weren't more organized because there was a single thing about which they could organize, and that was their color? And women come in all shades.
My reading of the World War II period is that black women were clear that they were using the FEPC, which is a structure which was really organized towards race discrimination complaints, that they were, they found, from their point of view, the race movement a lot more sturdy and a lot more capable than any sort of non-existent, as we come to conclude, feminist movement. So that this tradition, if you will, of identifying with the race movement rather than the sex movement certainly has very good foundations in the war period. And then if we wanted to, I think we could take it back to the Depression as far as Depression agencies. But that seems to have been, historically anyway, a more operational kind of vehicle for change. Now, it's true that black women during the war, as I said, had, I think, the worst mixture of discrimination possible, so that they don't get a whole lot out of this regime that they do try to use. But that's clearly where they're seeing their identity, at least in the war period.
But I mean, let me, just to respond to the other half of your comment that, you know, I think in spite of the fact that women come in all shapes and sizes, more shapes and sizes than blacks, I suppose, although I guess a case could be made there too. You know, we know that women can organize a political movement. We have one, right? I mean, so it's not, what's not true?
You can't say women come in all sizes and shapes and sizes.
And black women, no, that's not what she was saying, that women as a group are defined by class and race, etc. We know that, okay? I thought what this woman, Jean, was saying was that women as a group are perhaps harder to organize, or were perhaps harder to organize because we are divided by class and race, whereas blacks have more homogeneity and therefore are more organizable. Isn't that what you were suggesting?
Yes.
I'm saying we know that women can organize in spite of that because we've done it more recently.
I would agree with those characterizations.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I think simply, to put it historically, during that period, there were more vehicles in the black community for tangible and usable protest or movement. There was a structure there that they were building. And that is in stark contrast to, let's say, what is going on in feminist circles of that time, where I can only really find people like Pearl Buck and Lillian Smith and some singular others who are coming out with a very strong feminist and pacifist line.
But that's my point. The whole thing is they have done it.
Well, so the question is why? That's what you're saying.
One illustration of looking at ourselves for why you get this kind of segmentation. The comments here that I heard in the last 15 minutes segmented women and blacks. And so there exists no black. Where are black women? Are all the women quiet, or all the black women? You know, that's the side of that book. We also have to ask ourselves in our cultural understanding and relationship of white people and black people, so that when or says this or that, then I think we have to ask if a girl would be in such a description of black men before we allow them to have a point of view.
I think a key factor in what happened during the war, in terms of supporting the struggle for blacks versus the struggle for women, was that the black political organizations were very involved in that struggle. And I was involved in such organizations, and I know that we frequently dealt with issues. I was one of the main thrusts of so-called racism. I do not recall almost ever having a discussion of sexism.
The Employment Act, I mean, officially, it's true that in practice this is violated, but it was, there was that executive order that said you're not supposed to discriminate on the basis of race. There was nothing like that for women. It was completely legal to discriminate until 1963.
There was a tremendous support from that organization, which played a very, very important role in this struggle. And women, the issue of it's my memory is dim. I just do not remember that as a big. There was a big, they published a pamphlet.
Yeah.
You know, a little thin pamphlet. It was, you know, they knew they were supposed to, but there was no active struggle.
I lost that further. I think a lot of what groups mirrored what happens in larger society were exactly the same action happened and then the women took over. The women took over the jobs and the men had as leaders. And when the men came back and you know, there was a problem or something, they would blame on the women as not having leadership capabilities instead of wondering to be, you know, there was something wrong with the political wellness.
That's very interesting, yeah. There is evidence of, in terms of what you're talking about, I know for the Communist Party, in terms of somebody did a little statistical study and showed the big increase in women's leadership during the war, and just like you said, I haven't seen anything that talks about what happened afterwards, but that's very interesting, yeah.
Just to give a personal example of that, I was working for the Social Security Corporation in the war, and I was very active in the union, and the male leader of the union was drafted, and he came to me and said, well, now you have to take over, which never really would have happened in the union. And I had no experience except for attending meetings, and no training of any kind, and I was just thrust into a position, and I was with great anxiety, and I realized that the whole feeling was, well, I realize now, since all the men will be gone, and all that will be left is women. And for us, it's not that important to call it a leadership, you know. It's okay. You know, it's a holding operation. And when I look back, I see that, you know, the whole attitude got up there. And then when he came back, I was out. Thank you.
Because I'm not sure whether it's really true. The time of crisis like that, where she would have to, nothing was from that would change her subconscious. That was something that I was not seeing the children change. It sort of seemed like a lot of lines were drawn that led to the development of the Black struggle, and the people who were in the hospital, and the ladies who were too. The embryo of the process. So I think it's been a lot of things. Including the person's if you want to change the world, this is how you act in the part of your organization.
Well, I don't know how to respond to that because you asked so many questions in your remarks. Let me think a minute. I mean, I don't really disagree with what you said in terms of the situation being flexible at the end of the war. I think that's really true. But I just think that, again, that the kind of personal life issues were just never posed. I mean, again, there wasn't... People's experience and, I guess, consciousness, though we don't really know what their consciousness... I mean, it's hard, it's very hard to know what that... was about. This is a little bit like what you raised, I guess. You know, obviously there were some important different experiences that occurred, okay? It doesn't seem like, you know, again, unlike now, and I don't know how to explain this, that there was any cultural acknowledgement of that even. I mean, insofar as it was even talked about, it was talked about in extremely negative terms, like this is horrible, all these things are happening, it's because these damn women are working. Yeah, sorry? Yeah, I mean, that was sort of jokingly, you know, critical, but the sort of social worker types and people like that who would just say that, you know, this is endangering our, the kind of stuff the New Rights has today, you know, our society is falling apart because women are working kind of stuff. And, you know, boy, when this war is over, we're going to get back to work and fix this up. Now, I don't know. I mean, that may have nothing to do with what it meant to the people themselves who went through these changes, you know, it's quite possible. Well, I mean, they may not have cared what the social workers thought. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just have no way of knowing that from the evidence I've seen, which is very thin anyway. So, you know, it's just, I just feel like it's an unresearched question that we just thought, which is one you raised, too.
A lot of people didn't have a certain idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because then you just really just
guessing. Well, it's a sort of counterfactual question, right? So it's... Today, yeah. In the contemporary situation. I guess I think that, you know, that what has changed now is that not only do women have jobs outside the home, et cetera, whether they're married or not, but now that is totally legitimate. Sex discrimination, even though it goes on, is completely illegitimate today. That is one thing that really has changed. I mean, I think... Well, because... Well, we could have a fascist revolution, in which case it's... Well, okay, sure. Short of that... I think, you know, which I don't think is going to happen. I mean, if you think that's going to happen, then I'm completely wrong. Okay? Anything's possible, sure. But it seems pretty unlikely. I mean, short of that, it seems to me, you know, there's just no toleration for that. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not going to continue to be the 59-cent problem, et cetera. I mean, that hasn't changed. But there's no... You know, even the AFL-CIO is in favor of not just the ERA, but it's completely, when Reagan floated this idea that unemployment was high during the Reagan recession because there were too many women working, it was a total lead balloon. I mean, nobody bought it. It was buried in the newspaper. Everybody sort of laughed about it. The AFL said it was so stupid. You know, I mean, it was just completely, it did not, that's part of it. There is no legitimacy for that.
I mean, you can't really say there's no legitimacy.
For him, there's legitimacy, but not for that kind of attack on women's employment. I just don't think it's possible anymore. I mean, you know, that attack was made in the 30s, and it was very successful. I mean, it didn't get women out of the labor force, but it meant that they had to take the wedding ring off at the factory gate or whatever. That's just not going to happen again, I don't think. Now, I can't prove that to you, obviously.
To me, what did happen, for women during the war was this kind of, that it was a first experience of meeting a lot of different other kinds of women and looking at a lot of issues about what sort of
of differences had to be gotten over and why. That meeting with other women and realizing what race differences were, what ethnic differences were, what class differences were, and how they were going to cope with them, and how that made a great deal of difference in how the rest of the world treated them. That was a sort of like first basic necessary foundation experience, which had to be had before, I think, a lot of the later things that have happened in the 60s, et cetera, could ever take place. So that was a kind of a groundwork in that period. But in terms of what might, you know, be possible now versus then, the only thing I can see that's, well, to me, that one striking difference is that we don't have a declared war of the type that we had in World War II now. So that, as a matter of fact, women are spending not as much time as they would on war work as you would have during the war. So there is a little bit more of discretionary time, which is very lacking during the war. I mean, if I wanted to explain why there were a whole lot less changes than one would hope for, it was simply overwork and not having enough time to do a lot of the stepping out that everybody talks about. But I wouldn't agree that that what is going on now is sort of an irreversible change. Because I see the same sort of propaganda machine able to steam up a great deal of very patriotic identification by women in this country.
What does that have to do with the changes in women's lives as women? I mean, I agree, there are plenty of right-wing women. But
well,
no
it just
problem,
doesn't come by itself. It starts bringing with it a whole lot of other baggage. You might not have, you know, wanted a lot of that other baggage, but you become part of that side of the aisle. So women who might just sort of think that it's a good idea to defend your country against communism will, you know.
Well, maybe we should go on about this. I don't know. I could say more about it. Is there anyone else wants to intervene on this debate or what?
Well, I don't know. I'm just
That's interesting. And can I just add one point,
sure,
which is that
sure.
It seems to me those, that recomposition that you're talking about is making what has historically been defined as female jobs
mm-hmm.
much more central to the economy than ever before. The jobs
mm-hmm.
that are disappearing are, for the most part, those so-called middle class jobs are male jobs mostly,
mm-hmm.
and the smokestack jobs too. I mean, you know, so that if anything, I just think it reinforces my slight of argument.
Actually,
here.
So much male employment.
Pardon me? The existence of feminist ideology that has some popular support, you know, is what existed in the more recent period, that just wasn't there then. And so the one question is where that comes from, if we're sort of rattling around here. I don't know the answer to this. You know, and I guess the other question is what does that, you know, does that, seems to me, I mean, I've been suggesting about a lot of opposition about this thing, that makes it possible for these things to be lasting changes in a way that they really want during the war, for all sorts of other reasons as well, I suppose. But,
well,
yeah.
What I
want
to say is, I agree with you on certain things that women's position now is stronger than it was after the war. One reason I think is because of the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just
the Tina's point about the
women. There was no struggle then. That's something that's almost just the women was given. And I was given that as an effect, or the other voice, but now it was, now they have to struggle for it and like that. But also converts the minds of those that see that, but before no one really converted to that, they should have their jobs later. Now, at least myself, I don't think people see it from there. You are facing fear. Yes, when we are a part of it, they accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important.
Well, my students, and I just have to say, I teach at Queen's College, and you know, public college, and it's mostly working class students. They are incredibly conservative. But not women. You know, the women's courses are the most popular courses in the sociology department, which is what I teach them. And, you know, they are all right now, and, you know, it's incredible. And so I just really think it's a mistake to assume that there's necessarily very good, and that we're doing on top of the surface by assuming that. Now, obviously, it does for some people.
Analysis of like the Deaf Mission Society and a really, you know, thought out pacifist position, which was a pacifist feminism that sounds remarkably like 1985. And there she was, you know, out in the cold, so to speak, with the rise of you know, the war mobilization. You know, it's the sort of patriotic women who are in those, you know, bureaucracies of government who manage to let you sort of space and call the shots. So, I mean, if the voice of the pro-buck types is going to get drowned out in the face of a resurgence of patriotism, I don't see any reason why you can't have something happening in
I guess I'm not arguing that feminism is something that's going to last forever. All I'm saying is that there have been really basic changes in women's actual life situations that I think can't be reversed very easily. In other words,
I know there's an difference between our actual lives and the kind of ideological household that we walk around with in it. And one can be doing some very what might look to be like very liberated work, just like I wrote in The Riveters. And yet, when there's not a consciousness that is aware of it and taking it into account and validating it as a statement about what's possible for your gender, your race, or whatever, then what is it? We have a lot of people, I know, because I teach in this college, who have notions of work and so forth, which do not dive with, let's say, what you call feminist ideology. And yet they're willing to ride with the gains that other women have done, through a feminist movement. So they don't necessarily feel any need to pay a debt to ideology. But they can end up part of the problem rather than part of the solution.
And if they're the fear of oppression against the women, the affiliation is personalism for their space in the job of the community. It seems to me would follow from the
Yeah.
Just
a couple of quick things. One thing is that the only problem that we have in the discussion is that the feminism may never send us well, acting as though they're one broad thing. So we could argue, I think, that many things that you're saying seem to be very much as a person to understand well, but that, this being a difference, this racist is what we're saying, not to put your brand of feminism, you're saying, you should go about your business to find too. It doesn't necessarily lead to the best of
Sure. No, I agree. I don't have any. That's very clarifying, I think, of the debate. I guess, though, if you look at it in a historical perspective, what you're calling the sort of pseudo-Reaganite feminism is miles, years ahead of anything that existed in 1945. That's all. I mean, so this is our, that's what I think, anyway.
The other thing I
just
wanted to say was back to the issue on the
sexism
on the left. I just want to recommend an article to you that I don't think is very much around. It's called Left-Wing Sexism on Masculine it's both very useful and philosophical.
And where can we find it?
It's in a journal called Practice. I don't know what to say, it's in a journal called Practice. You can talk to me afterwards if you want to get a copy of it. It is, it's it's published in New York. It's published by the New York Institute for Folk Therapy and Research. But I don't know how it works.
It's a great title, anyway. I hope the article is a good title.
How about our Jesus Sanctuary? And how about another one? Another one along those lines is the Living Garden of the Doctrine of the Living Revolution, which is not deeply theoretical, but abstract from that, and very concrete ways of getting specific tactics that we use on the left. It is more generic in general.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.